Greetings. Welcome back. This is the Advisor Pact Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little. Listen, each and every month we select from among all the questions that we've received a handful of questions we think that might be the most benefit to the most numbers of members. If you're new to the program, welcome. If you've been in the program for a while, then welcome back. Let's get right to it. The Advisor Pact Monthly Program, at the end of the day, it's a pledge that you make to each and every ideal client to provide four things that clients, that's to say affluent clients, claim they cannot get anywhere at any price. And that is protection, attention, coordination, and transparency. It sounds simple, but in the execution, it's quite a project. And that's what the Advisor Pact Monthly Program is all about, learning how to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, not just in any fashion, but in a manner in which truly exceeds your client's expectations. First question that we received was from a relatively new member whose the background on this advisor is adding subject matter experts. So this trusted advisor is actively adding new team members. And the question is, what's the big picture for the Advisor Pact Monthly Program? Can you give me an overview of the entire program? In other words, how can I explain to my team exactly what we're trying to accomplish? You know, it's funny, Bill Bachrach has a saying for this: if you can't explain it, you can't do it. So I admire the question, and I think it's a great objective, the ability to be able to articulate to your team exactly what you're doing. And by the way, a little bit later on in this session, we're going to be talking about the team goal, which is something you also need to be able to articulate. So as we continually say, now this may be new to you, but as we continually say in the modules, so as you receive the monthly projects and you're getting courses from us on a monthly basis, we really try to bring it back to this truism that clients are pretty simple. When you talk to clients, and we've got a lot of data on this, as you're interacting with affluent clients, they're very clear. All they really want is an advisor who's competent and worthy of trust. All right. So let's break it down. What does the Advisor Pact Monthly Program do to be able to deliver on these two desires of every client? All right. On the idea of competence, the whole program is predicated on your ability to build a team and then continually lead your team. It's quite a project to build a skilled team, and that's to say five subject matter experts, and then to hold them accountable to implementing and achieving the goal of the team. And more on that in a minute. So that's competence. So competence is basically acquiring skilled and competent subject matter experts. You know, our system gets substantially easier once you've got your team built. Until you've got your team built and you've got five subject matter experts, in other words, subject matter experts in each of the five areas of personal finance, you know, until you get those experts in place, it's a juggling act. It seems very complicated, very difficult. So it's acquiring skilled subject matter experts who are actually capable of impressing ideal clients. And that goes to our 12-step deliverables team recruitment process. And if you have not received that course yet, don't worry, it's coming because it's fundamental to our program. And in essence, you don't accept or invite any subject matter expert onto your team unless they already have clients who meet your ideal client profile and have been impressing those ideal clients for quite some time. Once you've been convinced that a subject matter expert is capable of impressing individuals that meet your ideal client profile, well, then you invite them onto your team And once you have five of them, you've got your team in place. And then it's your job, as far as leading your team, to hold each and every one of them accountable to the team goal. And we'll go through the team goal here in a minute. Or I'll tell you where to go find the team goal. Okay, so let's talk about trust. Trust is a funny thing. Trust is earned over time. And it really boils down to consistently exceeding client expectations. So trust comes in the form of earning trust by way of, or because you've figured out how to exceed client expectations consistently over time. So the way we have you do that in the toolkit is you document the client experience, and then you just continually improve the client experience. So we have a very precise format for doing this, and we can tell you with authority that it works great. It's basically consistently exceeding client expectations, and the key to this whole thing is getting your team on board. Can you persuade each and every member of your team as a part of the team goal that it's their job, every member of the team's job, to continually improve the client experience until the annual referral rate exceeds 2.000. All right, let's pause for a minute, because each of you on this call are running your own race. So you've got your own journey. You're at different stages of our program. Some of you have been tracking the annual referral rate for quite some time. Some of you, this is a new term to use. So let's pause for just a moment and let's just talk about the annual referral rate. If you aren't already, then you should be tracking the annual referral rate at whatever stage of our program you're at. Eventually, this will become an instruction. It will come to you in one of the courses, and you'll get some more formal training on this. But for right now, just so you'll understand the response to the question, you know, what's the big picture and overview of the program? This annual referral rate is the most direct measure of whether or not you are impressing your clients or not. So we're not going to get into it here. We've got whole entire modules on this. But just to say this, if you're receiving referrals from your ideal clients, that's normal and that's expected. And if you're receiving referrals at an increasing rate from your ideal clients, then you're impressing your clients. There's no question about it. Now, if your annual referral rate is flat or declining, does that necessarily mean your clients are not happy? No, that doesn't necessarily mean that. But it is a red flag, and it's a cause for concern. So the annual referral rate is just simply the total number of referrals received from only from ideal clients over the last 12 months divided by the total number of ideal clients. That's your annual referral rate. You calculate this number out to 3 decimal points. You begin tracking this number like you would an investment or a stock over time. You chart it month by month, at least monthly. And it's the trend, the change over time, that's important. This number should increase and will increase. And that's the point of our program, is to be able to measure the increase in this metric, because this is literally a metric of measuring the increase, the extent to which you're increasing, you're exceeding your clients' expectations, is what I meant. So that's the annual referral rate. So clients want an advisor who's competent and worthy of trust. So this idea of, you know, improving trust by consistently exceeding expectations, again, this is something that unfolds in our program over the over a number of courses through several modules, and it takes time. But the basic gist is this, in explaining this to your team, it's identifying one thing at a time It's literally discovering for a single client something that pleasantly surprises them, something that exceeds their expectations. So that means you establish and then document a thing which exceeds your client's expectations. You've identified something, your client smiles, it's clear to you, it's clear to everyone in the meeting. You know, you've exceeded your client's expectations. So quick, let's document it. And let's start documenting it for every other client. Let's attempt an experiment, you know, leaning into it and, you know, trying to find off of that one another thing. So you're experimenting, you're trying things. This requires quite a bit of effort on the part of you and on the part of your team. You have to get to know your clients. You have to understand what their expectations are, and you have to try things in order to experiment in how to exceed their expectations. Now, as tedious as it sounds, this actually in the implementation ends up being the fun part of the business. You know, you're experimenting, you're trying things. Sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss. But I can tell you, clients, even if you do something which, you know, maybe it doesn't particularly exceed their expectations, I can tell you, clients can tell when you're trying. Clients know when you're working hard to try to exceed their expectations. So you establish a thing which exceeds your client's expectations, you document it, you lean into it, find another thing which exceeds your client's expectations, then you document it and start using it for other clients and see if that works to exceed other clients' expectations, and so on and so on and so on. You just keep going and going and going, and every single team member contributes to the team goal. And this is very critical. It's every team member's responsibility to identify things that exceed the client's expectation or things within the client's financial affairs which could or might exceed the client's expectations. You know, this is a measure of your subject matter expert's skill and your skill at what you do. You know, can you look and peer into the client's situation, look at what their situation is, and start identifying things that in their situation might conceivably exceed their expectations? Where are the little complicated pieces and parts in each client's financial life so that you can begin experimenting with trying to exceed those things? And every team member agrees to continue improving until achieving the team goal. So trust is every team member agrees to the team goal. Every team member contributes to the team goal. Otherwise, why are they on the team? This happens and continues to happen until the annual referral rate exceeds 2.0. Okay, so pause for a minute. What is the team goal? Let's think about this for a minute. I've got a link for you. I do not want you to actually stop and look at this right now. But the team goal is best described in a little 2-minute video that I've got up on our YouTube channel. I don't have a lot on our YouTube channel, but this was so important, I decided to make a little 2-minute video. And I can tell you that I created this at the request of advisors over on the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, our more advanced flagship program. Those advisors said, you know, Mark, could you create a little something that I could actually give to my team members, my subject matter experts, and everybody on my team so that everybody understands the team goal? And I did. I put it up on YouTube, and I'm sending right now to you through the chat window. So if you'll examine your GoToWebinar window, look for the chat window. And I do recommend that you click that link. But be prepared, as always on YouTube, when you click a YouTube link, it launches immediately. And so turn down your speakers. And the minute that video launches, just pause it. Don't watch it now. Don't invest 2 minutes right now. It's not important. But this will fully explain the team goal. This will fully explain what every single member of your team needs to agree to contribute to, or else as good as they are and as expert as they are at all the various, narrow fields of finance, like financial planning and money management and insurance and tax and estate planning. So whatever their specialty is, they may be really, really great at that. We assume that they are, or you would not have invited them onto your team. But the question always is, with any subject matter expert that we don't know before they come onto your team, are they capable of being good team players? And that's measured by their ability and willingness to accept and agree to the team goal and contribute to the team goal. All right, so back to our premise. Clients want an advisor who's competent and worthy of trust. So you're building a team of skilled advisors, skilled subject matter experts. You're documenting and identifying things that exceed your client's expectations. So your five subject matter experts are working hard. They're deploying their professional skills. They're doing what they do. Financial planning, estate planning, money management, insurance, tax, whatever they're doing. They're doing it extraordinarily well. And they are continuing to deploy more and more of their skills until we achieve the team goal. And then as far as documenting the client experience, identifying those things as you come across them that seem to exceed the client's expectations, you're documenting those things. And the two things together, your team deploying their professional skills in an extraordinary way, and you working hard with your team to identify those things that exceed client expectations and documenting those things consistently over time, those two things intertwine to create in the client's experience, this is the advisor who's competent and worthy of trust. You're doing both. So when you think of competence, what do you think of? I can tell you from client data that what a client means when they say they're looking for an advisor who's competent, they're looking for an advisor who's capable of helping them achieve their outcomes. So clients have goals. So the question on the table is your team able to get your clients across the finish line to achieve all their goals? Clients want to make smart choices with their money. They've got tax issues. They've got estate planning issues. They've got money management issues. They've got, all the areas of their financial life. You know, if they travel abroad, they've got foreign currency issues, So the issues are different depending upon the client. The question is your team skilled enough to deliver the outcomes for the client so that they're making smarter choices with their money and, are they on track to achieving their goals? Trust is the accumulation over time of you and your team's ability to exceed your client's expectations, but consistently over time. And these two things together, competence and trust, they merge. And this is how, as you're working on both, you have your team working on deploying more and more of their skills until, the client's impressed. And as you're identifying things that impress your clients, you're documenting those things and improving the client experience. Well, the annual referral rate, the first thing you notice is it just begins to increase. It seems so frustrating. I can tell you this from my own experience. You're tracking this annual referral rate month after month after month. It doesn't move. It doesn't budge. It's just sitting there like a stone. And you're like, man, this is brutal. It's just so difficult to get that annual referral rate, which is just nothing more than the referrals provided by ideal clients over the last 12 months, to get that number to move. But eventually it begins to move. That's why we track this number out three decimal points. If you get so much as one referral from an ideal client, your annual referral rate will increase because we are, tracking the number out three decimal points. So the first goal or the first milestone then is to keep working, and your leadership role is to keep the team stoked, to keep the team excited, to keep the team motivated, to keep moving forward. for the first milestone to get the annual referral rate up over one. So 1.000. Now, theoretically, what this means is on paper, on average, if your annual referral rate is 1.000, that means that on average, you're receiving one referral for every ideal client. So if you have, I don't know, if you have 20 ideal clients and you have an annual referral rate of 1.000, that means you're getting 20 referrals from your 20 ideal clients over the last 12 months. And but that's on theory. We know that not every client refers at the same pace. Matter of fact, some clients just, you know, refer very little. Other clients refer quite a bit, but it doesn't matter. The focus is on increasing this number, increasing the annual referral rate, the bottom line. So the first milestone is to exceed 1.0. The second milestone is to exceed 2.0. So to achieve the guaranteed outcome of the Advisor Pack monthly program, which is to be receiving enough unsolicited client referrals to be filling your calendar with at least one initial client interview every day of the normal work week. That's five initial client interviews every week. Then we've never seen that occur for any team that didn't have an annual referral rate over 2.0. Now, the question is, how high does it need to be? And I always say that really depends on the skill of your team and the ability of your team. So if your team is highly skilled and has tremendous ability and focus on this goal, then I've seen annual referral rates exceed five. But I don't want you to focus on that. The goal is just to get it increasing and then to set your milestone goal, initial goal, at exceeding 1.000 and then to get it up over two. But the point is eventually to be receiving enough spontaneous unsolicited client referrals for five initial client interviews each week. Next question. This from a new member. There are 12 modules listed under the monthly project, beginning with vision and goals to the hero's journey. Do the 12 modules represent the complete training information for the Advisor Pact program or just the first installment? Just the first installment. The monthly project is the course that you receive at least one every month. So the commitment on our part in this program is to provide you with at least one course every month, and you'll keep receiving these courses. You'll keep receiving these monthly projects for you to work on internally until you've mastered truly comprehensive financial services. So what's the big deal about the first 12? Well, if we're sending out one a month, this is what you're looking at here is your first year. This is where there is some crossover with our other more advanced flagship program, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. The first 12 modules are the same for both programs. The difference is that the pace. So in the Advisor Pack monthly program, this program is for advisors who, you know, want to basically pace these courses out into a more digestible, manageable, at a more digestible, manageable pace. Because what I'm trying to say is, while the 12 projects are the same in both programs, over in the toolkit, let's say a new member joins the Trusted Advisor Toolkit. The first 11 of these 12 modules, the expectation is, And we assess new members to make sure that they're ready for the toolkit by this measure. Over in the toolkit, the first 11 modules are implemented in the first 90 days, approximately, on average. So the toolkit is really for advisors who are ready for a fire hose. They have a team that's totally geared up for a lot of work. They are 100% focused on this project. They're all in. They've jumped in the river with this concept of, you know, the ideas of delivering truly comprehensive financial services through a building and leading of a team of five subject matter experts. And so the only real difference between the Advisor Pack monthly program and our flagship program, the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, is the pace. Over in the toolkit, it's literally a fire hose. You get all this these modules, and the expectation is, you know, you and your team are working together to implement these modules as quickly as possible. And over in here in the Advisor Pack monthly program, it's just paced out at a much more pleasant pace, one a month. So these Advisor Pack monthly modules are going to continue after these first 12. And they will continue coming until you've mastered truly comprehensive financial services. How many people do you personally employ on your team? And what are their specific roles? Okay, well, that's a little more involved than you make it sound. Because I, like many advisors on our system, start off by contracting external subject matter experts, but as soon as the revenue is there, we don't teach this, but we do bring it up as a, you know, this is bring it up as an issue that many advisors might want to budget for, because I think we can all agree that it's easier if the team members are pretty much all under one roof. So as soon as I could budget for it and afford it, I brought all my subject matter experts in-house on salary. And so I can, and once you've got that, if you decide to do that, once you've got that done, then it's so much easier rather than try to chase down, you know, a contract labor individual like a tax accountant or an estate planning lawyer that has their own firm. When you need something for a subject for an ideal client, you know, it's so much easier to get up out of my desk and just pop in the office next door and talk to the tax accountant on our team, or go the other way and pop in the office next door on the other side, and it's, you know, an estate planning lawyer on our team. So it's just easier to bring them in-house, which is what I did and what many advisors end up doing over time. But at first, it's easier and more cost-effective to do as you're suggesting, which is have external contract subject matter experts. So let me answer your question. What you're looking at here is the structure of our model. So this is our business model. You have the ideal clients. The entire team serves the community of ideal clients. The ideal clients are up above. The trusted advisor is focused on the clients. The trusted advisor has a salaried administrative manager. Now, the administrative manager serves as the project leader for implementing all of this, implementing truly comprehensive financial services, and serving as the point of contact for all the subject matter experts to make sure that as for client progress meetings, making sure the administrative manager is the one responsible for making sure that all the subject matter experts get everything done. So the trusted advisors focused primarily on the clients, invest a lot of their time face-to-face or on the phone, interacting with ideal clients. And the administrative manager spends most of their day face-to-face or on the phone interacting with subject matter experts, making sure that everything that's supposed to get done for client progress meetings is actually getting done. Now, so the yellow positions are salaried, and the five oversight subject matter experts that you see here are usually start out as external contract labor subject matter experts that you acquire over time. This is what our 12-step deliverables team recruitment process is all designed to do, is to fill every vacancy, fill one vacancy every 60 days until you have all five of these team members in place. So that's the goal. And then once you have the entire team in place, all five subject matter experts, and at least half of your ideal clients acquired. So in other words, when you reach the halfway point and your team is fully in place, then in our model, we do recommend that you hire on salary a position that we call Director of Client Services. This person takes over for the trusted advisor for the management of the team. So prior to the Director of Client Services being hired, the trusted advisor, for all practical purposes, everyone's in essence a direct report to the trusted advisor, who is the team leader. After the acquisition of the Director of Client Services, this is when the trusted advisor starts focusing more or less 100% of their time on the ideal clients. And then the Director of Client Services becomes the direct report for the administrative manager and all the subject matter experts as far as conducting their performance reviews and so forth. And then somewhere along the way, after the halfway point, there's generally a need for one additional client service assistant. Now, this is the structure. This is the structure that we've validated. It definitely worked this way for me. And I'll go through another question here in a minute is about me going through my story. So I'll go through that. But the bottom line is these four positions will manage up to 100 ideal clients without any other additional salaried positions. Now, as I said, as revenue increases, you may want to, and it is highly desirable, to bring all these subject matter experts in-house on salary, but that's optional. It just makes it easier for the team to work together. You could, and many advisors do, keep this structure forever, which is to say all five subject matter experts are external contract labor. Now, one of the things that makes this work, you think, how on earth could these four people properly serve 100 ideal up to 100 ideal clients? Well, it's because we don't allow any subject matter expert onto the team unless they have at least two administrative support people. So commonly, for the tax subject matter expert, I don't invite a tax subject matter expert onto the team unless they have two administrative support people. Often it's a bookkeeper and maybe an administrative assistant. Sometimes it's a junior accountant and a bookkeeper, but at least two. For the insurance team leader, it's some kind of a service assistant and maybe a clerical assistant. That's very common. For an estate planning lawyer, it may be a paralegal and an administrative assistant. Financial planner might have a paraplanner and an administrative assistant. And the money manager might have a trading assistant and an administrative assistant. But the point is, this structure can easily manage up to 100 ideal clients because it's not just the four that you've got on salary. It's the four plus, you know, each area of personal finance has a team of at least three that are serving your clients. Now, that's a pretty substantial organization right there. Not to mention that there are some additional subject matter experts. Let me just, I don't want to get too advanced here, but, you know, somewhere after the halfway point, it occurs to advisors, and we have a course on this, a module that's coming down the road, a monthly project about second tier subject matter experts, or let's call them other subject matter experts. So yes, it's going to occur to you that you want kind of a second line of subject matter experts in your back pocket for specific situations, maybe a mortgage, maybe a mortgage broker, maybe a private banker, maybe a real estate expert, perhaps a vehicle purchasing consultant, whatever. There's a whole bunch of second tier subject matter experts that you'll likely want to get in place at some point. I mean, the sky's the limit. I mean, we've had aircraft purchasing consultants, boats, you know, watercraft purchasing consultants. Anyway, other subject matter experts. And then let's kind of go through each specialty. So insurance there are all these areas of insurance, and at least for us, and as we've observed other advisors, it's almost never one subject matter expert in the area of insurance. To cover all these areas of insurance, it's usually two or three subject matter experts. Once you've got those two or three experts in place to cover all these areas of insurance, then you see who's got the greatest leadership skills and you elevate one of them to be the insurance team leader who's in charge of the entire area. But again, you know, each subject matter expert has at least two administrative support people. So again, it's a much more involved team. On the legal team, yes, you need to have an estate planning subject matter expert because every client, part of their financial plan is estate planning. But you're going to want to have a transaction attorney on hand in, let's call it, your legal department. So there are almost always two legal subject matter experts. Each of them have two administrative support people. So transaction attorneys handle things like purchase of, if a client purchases a home or refinances a home or buys or sells a business or, you know, anything along that line. Anytime a transaction is or a contract is required, then you'll want to have a transaction attorney on hand to review that. So that's your legal department. Money management, there's four areas of money management: asset allocation, overall portfolio management, individual account management, and daily management. This is placing trades, clients calling in and wanting distributions, transferring of funds, changing retirement account beneficiaries, things like that. So whether that's one individual doing all four or four individuals, that's usually more than one individual, each of whom have two administrative support individuals. So as you can see, it's quite an organization, but you're right. Only the positions in yellow are on salary. Everything else can be and starts out for sure being external contract labor. And you only pay for those people every time you add an ideal client. So you're not paying any of them until you add an ideal client. So you literally could build this team on a shoestring budget with zero budget because you're not paying for anybody on the team, other than your administrative manager, until you've added an ideal client. And then, of course, all these other subject matter experts, starting with the main five, and they're two administrative support people. Your primary five, let me go back to that image for just a minute because we've gotten kind of to an involved, complex issue. But this is the initial team. So it's you and your administrative manager serving as project leader. This is the simple team that you focus on right now. And the administrative manager is your payroll responsibility right now. Usually they start off part-time. As you add ideal clients, they moved full-time. This idea of, getting the subject matter experts to continue, deploying their skills and doing more and more for clients until we exceed their expectations, that generally will take a full-time administrative manager to keep the team stoked. But the point is, the two positions in yellow are on salary. The others you pay for only when you add an ideal client for their services, and then you build the team from there. You mentioned in the videos that you added 83 ideal clients over 34 months. It would be great to get some additional detail and color on that remarkable achievement. For example, how many were referral versus self-referral? Were each of those paying the same flat fee? How do you equip your team to handle 100 ideal clients versus, for example, 50 or a smaller number? Okay, let me just kind of walk through my story just to get it out on the table. I don't go through this very often, so some have never heard this, and some, have heard this quite a bit. So I had been in the business since April 28th of 1981, but it wasn't until December 31st of 1999 that I had the big epiphany to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. Why? Because I had built a very dumb business. I had 1,242 mostly non-ideal clients. I was miserable. I was about to quit the business because I literally could not meet with every client every year, which kind of defeated the purpose of why I got in the business in the first place, which was, yes, to be successful financially, but also to make a difference and help people. So very frustrating. I was miserable. I was putting in 80, 90-hour weeks. Bill Bachrach actually does a much better job of describing this, how miserable I was, because he met me back then. And anyway, I was not a happy camper, and I had built a very stupid business. So the way it worked was, in 1999, I developed a very strict ideal client profile. That's to say, not a wish list of who I'd like to have as an ideal client, but literally all the criteria that a client must meet in order to, the way I built the ideal client profile and the way we teach members of the Advisor Pack monthly program to do this when that module comes down to you is basically to create a profile of the client that you serve the best. And so that became a very strict profile. It became a bounce out factor. If as I was meeting potential clients, they did not meet every single criteria of my ideal client profile, then I did not invite them into the ideal client community after December 31st of 1999. Now, am I saying every advisor in the Advisor Pack Monthly needs to be that hardcore and only accept clients if they meet your ideal client profile? No. We have a concept called survival clients. Bill Bachrach coined that term. And a survival client is just what its name implies. If you, for the survival of your business, come across a potential client and they're a non-ideal client, but you need to acquire them for the survival of your business, well, then of course, your survival instincts will tell you you've got to accept that client. But the quicker you move to this standard, the better. Developing a strict ideal client profile and only accepting clients if they meet the profile. So once I developed that profile, I applied the profile to my community of clients, 1,242 clients, and it turns out that after 12 years in the business, I only had 17 ideal clients. I was stunned and scared. I did not know if after all those years that I could, in essence, start over with 17 clients and rebuild my business, but that's exactly what I decided to do. So I politely disengaged from 1,225 non-ideal clients, and I immediately built a team of five highly skilled subject matter experts in order to deliver what came to be called truly comprehensive financial services. So I acquired a financial planning subject matter expert, a tax planning subject matter expert, an estate planning subject matter expert, an insurance subject matter expert, and a money management subject matter expert. All right. So they were all external contract labor. I only paid for their services as I acquired a new ideal client. So flash forward. I started doing this December 31st, 1999, 34 months later, October 22nd, 2002, I closed my business to new clients. I now had 100 ideal clients paying $24,325 a year annually, which obviously if I were doing this all over again, I would charge substantially more than that. As a matter of fact, we did have some clients, handful of clients, paying up to four times that amount, which, but mine was a lifestyle decision. I only wanted 100 clients, and even at 100 clients, when I started out in 1999, I was not sure if we could properly serve 100 ideal clients. So, you know, that the goal was a revenue goal, and it had to do with over $2 million of revenue annually. And so I set the goal as at 100, but I decided that I would stop acquiring clients at any point that I felt like we couldn't serve them. So I added 83 ideal clients. In other words, I started with 17. I added 83, and that left me, that, you know, means 34 months later, after adding 83 ideal clients, I had 100 ideal clients. And to answer your question, how many were self-referral versus client referral? They were all 83 were spontaneous, unsolicited client referrals. Now, back in that day, there was no training for what we now call the referral conversation. So we always refer, the Advisor Pack Monthly program only deals with serving ideal clients once you acquire one. So we don't get into client acquisition in the Advisor Pack Monthly program at all. Our program starts once you've acquired at least one ideal client. So our entire program is about exceeding the expectation of an ideal client once you've got them. We don't deal at all with client acquisition. Why? Because it already exists out there, plenty of it. And I followed Bill Bachrach's values-based financial planning, and that's why if an advisor needs client acquisition strategy and skills, it exists, and we recommend, we just give everybody over to the advisor ARVT, the Advisor Roadmap Virtual Training Platform by Bill Bachrach. And so that's where that training comes in. The reason I bring all that up is Bill's teaches now a referral conversation. He did not teach that back in 1999. That did not exist. And it was funny. In the year 2000, it was actually Bill Bachrach who, in talking to me, asked me point blank, do you ask for referrals? And I said, no, I never ask for referrals. And he said, well, that's not very smart. And so in the year 2000, I began having conversations with clients, but even then I never asked for referrals. I just, in essence, had conversations with clients occasionally about how I viewed referrals as, and I just conveyed that when clients are referring, we assume that we're exceeding their expectations, or else they wouldn't take the risk and refer us to people that they care about, introduce us to people that they care about. But for clients who aren't referring, I would explain to those clients, you know, it's just a question on the table. Like, we don't know whether we're exceeding your expectations or not. So I just literally shared with clients how we viewed referrals internally, just simply as a means of, you know, determining client satisfaction. But even then, I didn't really ask for referrals. So for me, it worked out that if I just focused on competence and the client experience, making sure that the subject matter experts were highly skilled and were deploying their skills actively for our clients and trying harder and harder every month to exceed the client's expectations. And then on my team, and then get everybody focused on observing the clients and seeing what pleasantly surprised them, what exceeded their expectations, and then stop, document that. We deploy that for all the clients. So we literally just created a process to develop and document the ideal and extraordinary client experience. What that yielded for us was 83 unsolicited client referrals from our 17, started out with the 17 ideal clients. So that was just an answer to your question. I was active with self-referrals. I was highly active in the community, chairman of the board of the Chamber of Commerce, and active on the United Way allocations panel in my town. I chaired that. But self-referrals were great. But for me, they just generated non-ideal clients, and lots of them. But I never got an ideal client from self-referral. So here are my numbers. My goal was to add one ideal client a month. I had no idea whether that was possible or not. I just set it as a goal and started picking up my activity to see if I could achieve that goal. What it ended up being to meet that goal, that meant I had to have over 100 conversations a month. In other words, the activity that was required by the goal of acquiring one ideal client a month was I had to really get out there. I had to get out of the office and interact with potential clients. I interacted, yes, with self-referrals, but over time, more and more, I was interacting with potential clients that were introduced to me by my existing clients. And that's what began increasing and picking up over time. I had to have a significant interactions with 12 potential clients. In other words, of all these 100 conversations, my numbers turned out in retrospect, looking back, I had to have 12 significant conversations where they were engaged, I was engaged, they were engaged, they were truly interested in what we do, and you know, they were interested in enough in moving forward that 12 significant interactions with potential clients yielded one initial client interview. And in our program, Advisor Pack Monthly, because not every advisor utilizes Bill Bachrach's program, the initial client interview is the same as it is the financial roadmap. So the financial roadmap is done in the initial client interview. So if I had 12 significant conversations, then that yielded one initial client interview or one financial roadmap. And for me, I had to have 7.8 initial client interviews or 7.8 financial roadmaps in order to yield one ideal client. So there's everything in a nutshell. So I started out in 2002 adding one ideal client about every 3 months. By June of 2001, I was adding one ideal client every 2 months. And then by December of 2001, I was at the point of adding one ideal client every month. That was my goal. And then the flood began. I received so many spontaneous, unsolicited client referrals because we had been pressing on our team, you know, continually to be doing more until we exceeded their expectations. And along the way, we were documenting the process, improving the client experience, and the entire team was focused on that. The flood began in February of 2002 with all the spontaneous, unsolicited client referrals coming at a faster pace, frankly, than we could handle. This, what you're looking at right here, is the tool that we use in the Trusted Advisor Toolkit to track activity on a daily basis. So we don't teach this exactly in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, but since you asked, I just thought I would show this to you. This is the app that they use over in the toolkit. You can certainly replicate this and do this on your own. The lower row, these are the goals, and above were the actual. And so to walk through the four, the first column is how many hours we're engaging with potential clients over the last 7 days on a rolling average. So looking back over the last 7 days, I had invested 7 hours interacting with potential clients. The goal was 7 hours. Okay. So how many referrals were received in the last 7 days? 10. The goal was 10. So tracking how many referrals over the last 7 days, over the last week. How many initial client interviews are scheduled over the next 7 days? Well, I had to have 8 in essence to acquire one ideal client. And on this snapshot that I took of this advisor, there were none scheduled for the next 7 days. That's not good. And then the final is, how many clients have you added over the past 90 days? Well, I had added 3, and the goal was 3. So I actually took this snapshot from a live advisor over on the toolkit. But the key is this one right here. If you want the leading indicator of what to track, it's this thing that we call, and we do teach this in one of the monthly projects. It's called potential client interaction time, and it's how much time are you investing each and every week interacting with potential clients. This goes under the theory that you're not going to add any ideal clients unless you're interacting with potential clients. So how much time are you interacting with potential clients face-to-face or on the phone? So it doesn't, nothing counts unless you're interacting directly face-to-face or on the phone with a potential client. And just to wrap up, I've got a couple of minutes here till we finish, but but these are back to my numbers. My weekly client acquisition time worked out. It kind of just worked out this way. It was 2-to-1 in terms of prep time versus actual time invested face to face or on the phone with, you know, what we call PCI time or potential client interaction time. So my weeks worked out like this: 6.25 hours per week face to face or on the phone with potential clients. That's what it had to be. That was ended up being about 15% of my week, actually face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients, not potential ideal clients, but just potential clients. These are people that were introduced to me by clients or, you know, yes, I was out there with self-referrals. I was trying to interact with potential clients that I was generating on my own, that I was meeting out in the community on my own. So I invested 6.25 hours a week face-to-face or on the phone with potential clients. And what that required for me was double that time, 12.75 hours a week. I had to invest kind of in the office preparing for PCI time. So you don't just show up and start interacting with potential clients. No, you have to go through your files and figure out who you haven't followed up with, who you need to follow up with. You know, it's some people call this getting ready to get ready. So that's what it took for me. It took about 2-to-1, 12.75 hours of getting ready to get ready to talk to potential clients. And then, you know, 15%, that's 30% of my week getting ready to get ready, 15% of my week actually interacting with potential clients. And then, you know, some people wonder, well, does that leave enough time to actually, you know, serve clients? Well, over half of my week, I still had time to serve clients and do all the other things to run my business. So putting myself in your shoes, what I spent most of that 55% everything else time doing at the beginning was building and leading my team. I didn't have a lot of clients. I had 17 ideal clients. But, you know, I was focused, you know, seriously, pedal to the metal, building and leading my team. So I spent a lot of time interviewing and building and acquiring subject matter experts. Our system is designed to acquire a new subject matter expert, fill a subject matter expert vacancy every 60 days, and then you have to sit down with those individuals and continually stoke the flames and get them focused on exceeding client expectations, because that's not easy once your team's in place. But that's what it takes. And you asked, and those are my numbers. So that's it. That's it for the Advisor Pact monthly session for this month. And I'll just leave up on the screen what is the best fit for the program, what it takes to actually be an advisor that succeeds in our program. But until next month, as always, we wish you all the best in implementing. I'm Mark Little.